from stpetecatalyst.com.
Joining me in the Catalyst studio are the YouTube megastars from Wander Local, Lauren Davenport and Daniel Fernandez. Welcome.
We're happy to be here, Joe.
So this is a little different format. I know you're used to talking to the camera and talking to your audience, which is over here. And I'm doing it, but you have to look at me and talk to me while you're here. St. Pete folks, known for founding the Symphony Agency. I still hold a little bitterness that you changed it from the I to the Y. I like the I'm going to admit that because I like the I, but I understand. I understand why. Home to such other luminaries as Chris Jenkins et al. It's been a successful agency and got it to the point where you were able to nip out and do something. What was that thing?
Want to start?
Well, like any successful business, the goal is always to grow it to a point where it runs without you. And we were very blessed to have an amazing team to be able to do that. And about 3 years ago now, Daniel looked at me one day and said, "Hey,
I think it's time.
It's time to travel more." And so we looked around at our big, beautiful house in St. Pete, technically Gulfport, which y'all know what that is because of where we are, and all the stuff, and just decided it was time to go minimalist and travel full time. So we sold everything and packed up two international suitcases and hit the road.
Yeah. You know, I think that we had spent so much time just grinding away, growing a business, that when it finally came time to reap the rewards, we had the big house, a big car, but it wasn't as fulfilling as we thought it would be. Mm-hmm. And we found it to be more fulfilling to travel and experience things. So that's when we decided we wanted to live an experience-rich life, less all of the kutchumans you would normally find with a successful couple who's...
All right. So let's dig into that a little bit. So obviously, when you travel, there are multiple ways to travel. You chose minimalism. Can you talk about your thought process?
Sure. So we really got interested in minimalism when we were in
Savannah.
Yeah. Daniel had just run a marathon with his best friend and didn't have a Netflix show to binge watch. And so we found the Minimalist, Pregnancy Brain.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Should have started with that. Most important thing.
With a show?
Documentary.
Ah, yes.
We found the Minimalist documentary and watched it. And as soon as we watched it, we both just felt like, oh my gosh, we have way too much stuff.
Right.
Like, there's so much stuff that we own. Everything that you own owns a part of you. Maybe we want to start downsizing. And so I got addicted to it basically through our kitchen, figuring out how many obnoxious number of gadgets that I had duplicates of. And as we got rid of stuff, giving it to Goodwill or friends, it just, the level of lightness was just palpable. And so we just kept going. And then that's kind of how we figured, hey, if we've got this big house, maybe we should just live in hotels and Airbnbs and travel full time instead of, leaving it behind and continuing to pay for it when we're gone.
It's true. I mean, ultimately we had downsized so much in our house and we'd given away so much stuff that we felt like we're in like startup phase. We're sitting in an empty house with a couch and a TV and nothing else around us. I mean, so much so that you could hear the echo in the house. And we just thought to ourselves, like Lauren mentioned, like, why are we even here?
Yeah.
Sharing one fork and one bowl because you'd given away.
Pretty much.
Practically, we'd given away or donated.
All right. So the minimalism was very intentional.
Yeah, it was.
So then there was the urge to wander. And how did that express itself first? Obviously you went international. So how did you sort of say, did you do a trial sort of in the States and then go international? Or what made you, how'd you pick where you were going?
I mean, honestly, we dove immediately into international travel. And we had decided when we first started that we were going to try this for 6 months. It was sort of like our beta test, right? There were things that we obviously had to learn along the way because we weren't adequately prepared. At the time, we left the U.S. with two suitcases, and that is legitimately all we had left. After we had downsized everything, we only had what was in the two suitcases and a backpack. So we learned to travel smarter, carry less things that could be used in different ways. But ultimately, once we hit our first country, we became addicted, almost instantaneously, right?
And we had done some international travel before that. So this was a whole new way to travel, though, because it wasn't, you know, going to the fanciest Marriott and staying at the place with the spa. We were traveling full time. Right. So it wasn't always on vacation. Instead, we were looking for, you know, more affordable places to stay than maybe we had traveled in the past. And so we really got to experience the cultures that we were living in versus just like the little bubble that you usually see when you're on vacation, which was amazing.
And I think a good part of that came from staying in Airbnbs versus the Marriotts and hotels. In order to really like feel like you're part of the culture, you know, like some of the best Airbnbs are in some of the best local neighborhoods, right. You know, not in the main city hubs. Right. So you're automatically already staying in some of the coolest local spots just by staying in an Airbnb. And a lot of the times the hosts were so generous that we met, even internationally, they would really even like offer to take us out to dinner, show us some of their favorite spots, introduce us to friends. So it really helped us to sort of embed ourselves in those local cultures as we traveled. And we immediately, again, just became addicted to, you know, that feeling of experiencing these local cultures firsthand.
That's great. And then just because I know folks that are into minimalism would be curious, obviously, when you talk about the size of the vehicle in your house, right? It's a big thing relative to a small thing, but now and you talk about the weight coming off, right? But now sort of literally you're putting weight on. And so there's a whole nother sort of relative level of minimalism when you're traveling. So how did that then translate into living out of a backpack? Did you continue to try to shed, or did you find, you know, how did you find your groove there?
So we traveled for a year and a half internationally, which we loved, and did the suitcase and backpack thing. And then pandemic hit. We found ourselves in the Sahara Desert when the borders of Morocco closed, which is a whole nother story. But we came back on a U.S. rescue flight here to St. Pete. My dad has a home here, and so we decided we'd stay with him, thinking that the world would go back to normal. Obviously, that didn't happen. And so about 3 months after staying with him, we were like, well, it's probably time for us to figure out something to do with our lives. And we got introduced to the Airstream team. And that's how we ended up, which we now live full time in an RV. And we have a lot more stuff now than just a backpack and a suitcase,
right.
Because we literally have a little home on wheels. But it's definitely a constant conversation that we're having when you're living tiny, whether it is suitcase and backpack or in an RV or a tiny home, the level of organization required to not continue to live just picking up 24/7 is very serious. So we just have a structure now in place where at least every quarter we take a full day. We like declutter everything. We do a donations pile, and just make sure that we're constantly shedding things that aren't bringing us joy.
Sure, makes sense. And then at some point along the line, you started documenting what you're doing and filming it. So how did that emerge?
Well, everybody told us when we first started traveling internationally that we had to start a YouTube channel. So we bought all of the equipment. Daniel loves tech.
I felt like I was almost hoarding all the equipment. I'm like, we need this camera. We need this camera. We definitely need a GoPro because we're going to be doing some action stuff. And you pack it all up and you realize very quickly that you just gave yourself another full-time job, right? So we're traveling. We're like exploring Rome, for instance. I'm strapping cameras to bikes. And then I realized, this is just too much work.
This is work.
It's not really enjoyable at this point because it's taken away from, you know, experiencing this moment. You know, and then what really changed for us had to be what we experienced in Morocco.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that?
So when we were in Morocco and the pandemic hit, it was a really unique time. Now looking back 2 years later, I think everybody would be like, oh yeah, the borders can close. Like you can get stuck in another country. But I mean, we had been traveling full time for a year and a half, and that was just unfathomable at the time. And so we had spent about 2 weeks in Spain with Daniel's dad for his 70th birthday, which was super fun.
Ironically, I asked my father, if you can go anywhere in the world, where would you want to go? And of course he says Spain, right? And literally Spain becomes like the hotbed.
Yeah.
So I brought my dad there. And now, you know, during all of this, you know, this stuff transpiring, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, is this going to be the trip where I like kill off my dad? I felt really guilty at the time. I didn't. Right. He made it safe home with the rest of my family, but.
But yeah, it was a little bit of a crazy adventure. So we shipped them home, but it was always our plan to continue on. And we were excited. It was the first time we were going to get to go to Africa. And we had a luxury Sahara desert adventure that we had planned. And I was like, all in. I was like, I don't care. Let's go. Like, feels right. So despite some of the chaos, we decided to just pop over to Morocco and continue our adventure. And it really was incredible. If you have never been to the Sahara Desert, it is bucket list worthy for sure. It is one of the most peaceful places on the planet that we have ever been. But it got a little bit stressful when all the borders shut down. They weren't letting their people in. There were not flights, boats, anything to get out. And so through that entire process, about a day before all of the borders shut down, our team reached out to us and they were like, hey guys, we're going to put together a press release just in case y'all need help. And Dana and I kind of looked at each other like,
just in case something goes sideways.
This is going to be, y'all are really overreacting, yeah. But if you would like to, we can do that. And so the next morning I woke up to a text message and we're in the Sahara Desert. So cell phone service, internet, very, very limited.
Extremely limited.
And I woke up to a text message saying, saw the news, sent the press release. And we didn't even know what the news was at that point.
No clue.
And so our guides who were at this in the Sahara with us, they literally hiked up a sand dune, put a router on a stick, and helped us get internet to find out what was going on.
The kindest people we have ever met in our travels. Legitimately, they like teamed up with fellow campgrounds in the Sahara Desert, wired some like extension cables up to the top of a dune to give us even just one bar of signal so that we can figure out what was going on. I mean, that genuinely kind.
So it worked. And when it did, my inbox was flooded with over 200 requests for interviews from the New York Times, People Magazine, CBN, you know.
Forbes, ABC, CBS,
everybody,
Fox, Univision, everything.
We didn't know to expect that we would become the couple stuck abroad, the American couple stuck abroad. But what we did get to learn, and it was really kind of an amazing experience, because very first thing we did was talk to the New York Times. And when I talked to the journalist there, she let us know about a Facebook group that was American Stuck in Morocco. And so we connected with that, and that article came out a couple hours later, and we started getting communications from people all over the world who were stuck. And we were able to take their stories and share them via all of these media outlets to help people who really needed help get home. So we focusing on their stories was...
It became our mission. We felt like it was our duty to get everybody's message out there to the world. So when we were doing these interviews, if you look at any of the interviews, we're never really talking about ourselves. We're talking about all the people that were stranded abroad, like people with disabled children and pregnant women who were stranded abroad and elderly running out of medication. Those are the stories that we were covering and trying to get out to the rest of the world so that they could come and get these people out. We weren't even really concerned about ourselves because we had sort of created a life where traveling nomadically was going to be okay. You know, so we figured even if we were the last people to be evacuated, it would be okay. But there were so many other people in need. And it really felt like at that time, a calling, like we were meant to do this.
A couple days later, they had U.S. rescue flights that came in. We did decide to come home at that point. But even over the next week, we continued with these stories because the media outlets now knew that we had these contacts, and we saw rescue flights go, you know, across the world thanks to some of these stories that we were telling. And so it was really impactful, and we realized at that point that our voices mattered.
Right.
And it didn't really matter how much work it was going to be. We needed to spend more time using that tool to make a bigger impact in the world.
So that became, you know, you had the intention, but sort of it waned, the interest waned, and this just boosted it up to and pushed it over the edge to say, I'm going to do
this. I think what was missing when we originally started the channel is the why. And during this experience, we learned what our why is and what our power of messaging is. And when we came back, we always talk about this, but we're not the same people that even left to go to Morocco. Yeah. We're different people.
Yeah.
than we
That's
are.
That's the beauty of international travel.
It really, really is. So when we came back, you know, we quickly realized that, you know, our business was no exception. You know, it was impacted by everything that was happening around the world. I mean, we lost the bulk of all of our business, and a lot of local businesses around us were, you know, people were losing their businesses. And that hurt us deeply because, you know, we were just like everybody else in need. And we felt like, hey, we've got this platform. Let's now leverage this platform for good, but for a different reason now. And that reason became, let's highlight all of the struggling local businesses and really the best of what's out there of these communities.
Right.
And give them the recognition they need. You know, steer people away from some of the big box stores and get them to spend some of their dollars with the local businesses that really are the heartbeat of this entire country.
Right. And that's where that's where the name combines both of those elements, Wander Local. And so after that, then, and so when you came back, you're staying with your dad, and then the transition to the Airstream, how did you hook up? And you said you hooked up with Airstream's people, which is, you know, not something you just are wandering down the street and there's the Airstream team. So there must've been some intentionality there.
Yes. So when we actually, after we got back, we did a story with DuPont Registry and—
Local outfit.
They're awesome.
Yeah.
And when we were talking about what are we doing next, they're like, okay, you're living with your dad. Y'all are adults. Like, how long is this going to last, right? We're like,
no judgment.
I think we were judging ourselves at this point. And we were like, well, we're thinking about maybe doing some type of road trip and like traveling the country and, you know, featuring local businesses. And they were like, well, do y'all know the Airstream team? And we were like, we know what Airstreams are. They're really wicked cool.
Yeah.
But no, we don't know the team. They're like, we need to make an introduction. And so they did just that. They made the introduction to Airstream Corporate, which is based out of Ohio. And at that point, we didn't have a YouTube channel. We had, you know, maybe a couple thousand followers on Instagram. And we just pitched them the dream. We told them, this is what we want to do. We've never RV'd before, but we love y'all's brand. You're American made. Like, you're everything that we want to, like, put forward with this. And they were like, well, if y'all shoot some YouTube stuff, then this sounds like a really good partnership. And so a couple months later, we were in an Airstream and traveling the country.
And what does that mean, we were in an Airstream and traveling the country? Does that mean that they let you use one or they?
Yep. Yeah. So they let us borrow a media unit for 3 months. And as soon as we got in it, basically, we were like, this is awesome. We need one of these. So we ended up buying our own.
Good. Yeah. Cool. So, you know, YouTube life then, right? Now, I know the channel has progressed to the point now where you're, you know, having appearances. You're just at the RV show recently, loads of followers, you know, some potential revenue from that. Just a lot of, it's just an interesting new dynamic, right? This whole idea of a YouTube person where people are just following you and being part of your life. And, you know, people who have fame, you know, as actors or whatever, they always say it's strange when people come up and have a familiarity with them, right? But you're that on steroids because not only they just know you, they're actually living alongside of you, right? So what is that like just to have people come up and, you know, feel like they're your best friend and you wouldn't, you know, you have no idea who they are?
It happens more often than we probably ever thought it would.
Yeah.
And honestly, we always talked about it when we first started. Like when we had a couple hundred followers.
Yeah.
We met our first fan, and right. We were really only at a couple hundred followers, and we thought it was the most amazing thing ever, and we wondered how it would sort of change as we grew. Now, you know, once you hit the tens of thousands, you know, you're known at, you know, pretty much any campground and RV dealership and things like that. But honestly, we love it because at the core of what we're doing here is we're trying to build a community. We know that we put ourselves out there all the time. We put the good and the bad out there.
Yep.
Things don't always go our way, but we also feel it's important to put those things out there as well. Like, we don't want to put that sort of Insta-perfect look out there because that's not reality, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And I think that because we put so much of ourselves out there, that people have sort of maybe gravitated towards us, and they've opened up as well.
Yeah.
And it's allowed them to kind of have a platform where they can share their experiences, the highs, the lows.
Sure.
And that for us is what really drives us. It's the community that we've built is really why we continue to do what we do.
Yeah.
And there's certainly an element of timing, as there are in many things, in that van life has become, and traveling vlogs and things are now just huge, right?
Yeah.
And so you're riding that wave very adeptly. And for folks who don't really understand what that means. It means that, you know, you're filming your daily, weekly life, putting it out there, and people are following along your story with you. And it's a very deep connection. I mean, do you feel that depth of connection when people come up to you?
Absolutely. And it's really amazing. I think that one of the things that we didn't expect, because we've done social media. I mean, I started our company on the creation of social media, you know, campaigns for companies. And that was, you know, almost 13 years ago now. But we had never really played in the YouTube space before we started doing our channel. And social media has it often feels very shallow. And the relationships, although this is changing some with Instagram, but the relationships don't go very deep. And YouTube is completely opposite of that. And we have just felt such a huge overpouring of love from the people who follow these videos that we produce on a weekly basis. And we've created lifelong friends from it all Truly. Over the country. And so it's so much fun when somebody will reach out to us and say, hey, we see that you're in X city. Can we take y'all to lunch? Can we go out to lunch? And we get to, it's like almost you're immediately friends because if they're watching your videos, then they think that they would connect with you and friends in real life. And that's pretty much how it goes. So it's really fun.
And I think something that we've done a little bit different than maybe a lot of the influencers, especially in our space, is we shoot a lot of live streams. And live streams are just sort of totally unscripted, completely interactive. And we look for ways to engage with those that are sort of engaging live stream as much as possible. Yeah. Like, we'll do game shows and we'll do this or that. And we just, it's really an opportunity for us to bond. Now, it might not get us the revenue or the viewership that, you know, some of the other videos would that are maybe a little more produced, but it allows us to, you know, create those deeper bonds, like Lauren was mentioning.
And, you know, you own a marketing agency, which means this is not, you're not doing this for a living. So you have a little bit of luxury there, but also as a marketing agency, you understand the power of a great thumbnail and great content and great equipment and great framing and great storytelling and all of that. So you kind of are still going through the motions of trying to do that, even if you're not relying on it for income. But for people who are interested or understanding the whole dynamic of it, there are people are making revenue. I'll let you break it down, but obviously it's affiliate. There's sponsorships. There's traffic. So can you kind of break down the typical revenue for a YouTube influencer?
It's a little bit different for everybody. So no true influencer is totally reliant on any one revenue stream. I think that's important to mention.
Or shouldn't be, right?
So like if you're totally reliant on YouTube and there's an algorithm change one day, well, then your revenue was just cut in half overnight, and you're like, oh my goodness, what just happened? So a lot of people try to diversify as much as possible. And that can include affiliate links. Merchandise is a great way for fans to support you. We've done a little bit of all of that, but what we've ultimately ended up using the platform for over the past year has really been actually for charity. So we've raised some money for the American Cancer Society, and we're very, very proud of that. We raised $12,000 a few months ago to run the New York City Marathon. So that was really one of the things we're most proud of. So while we didn't generate a ton of revenue for ourselves, we generated all the revenue for American Cancer Society, and that's something that we're very proud of.
And when Daniel says YouTube, if you're not super familiar with how that works, when you're watching YouTube, if you don't have a premium account where you're paying for it, there are ads that play on each video that comes through. If you have a channel that has over 1,000 subscribers and over 4,000 watch hours, granted, that changes all the time, but pretty good starting point, then your channel can be monetized. And so you make ad revenue off of those ads that are playing on those videos.
Got it. And this is sort of, a lot of this, YouTube takes a big portion of that ad revenue. You get a smaller portion of it, but that's what's really given rise to a lot of the entrepreneurial sort of almost Web3 elements where creators are going out and getting these different relationships and trying to find value, obviously, on different platforms as well. And just a in the weeds question, but do you benefit from premium subscribers at all?
Yes.
Okay. How does that work?
It's just a smaller portion.
Got it.
Yeah, because so they're not actually seeing the ads. You get a smaller portion of those views.
So they basically treat the premium subscription as revenue and give you a based on watch. Okay.
That's exactly
that
right.
That makes sense.
That's
cool.
Exactly right. And then also a lot of the platforms have membership opportunities as well, like your Patreons, YouTube memberships, things like that. We don't have anything set up like that, but that is another revenue stream.
So kind of, you know, then evolving and looking forward, there's, like you said, the ups and the downs of it. So some of the, over time, some of the stresses can be expectations of your fans. You know, you've built a relationship with these people by delivering to them. And
sure.
It's, you know, if you take a month off, it you know, messes with a lot of people's rhythms, we'll say, right? And, you know, and so, you know, that constant grind of delivering that consistent project, consistent quality product of, you know, which is your life, essentially, especially now with a baby coming. And how are you experiencing those elements of the channel?
I think you have to just take it at stride, right? I feel like when we first got started, so we publish every Sunday, and most often it's an actual like edited, produced video of like whatever is happening in our lives. Sometimes we'll do a live, like this week we teamed up with another YouTube channel, Pause for Love, and did like a flashback on, we got stuck in the Texas freeze last year, which was very entertaining because we had no idea what we were doing from an RV perspective at that point. So because of that, we hear people tell us all the time, Sunday night is Wander Local Night. Like they watch it like they would like a regular, they call it a show, like a TV show.
They do. I think we were surprised when we asked a question, like, how do you view our videos? And I would say a bulk of the people that are watching our videos are watching it on big screen TVs, like in their living room.
Like
one
really
guy in particular, 85-inch TV. And that, of course, got me thinking, well, dang, maybe
like,
we shouldn't use high-definition
cameras.
Yeah. Let's go back to low-definition cameras. Yeah. You know, it's a lot for an 85-inch TV, but it becomes Sunday night with the family for a lot of people.
Which is amazing. And so there is some pressure there around, you know, what are we going to do for this week's video? And so we try to get a little bit ahead. Usually we're publishing at least a couple weeks ahead. That's changed since we got pregnant because our lives have gotten a little bit crazier, mostly because we're excited about, you know, this new phase and what it will mean for us as a family. But there's definitely some pressure there. I think that, you know, like any kind of content production pressure or job pressure, you have to figure out what works for you to deal with that. And so we just kind of cadence it and make sure that we've got at least one video shot a week in advance, and it works out.
And again, it's not always, you know, a perfect life, you know? So, I mean, for instance, we've got an upcoming video about the fact that we're dealing with a high-risk pregnancy, you know, and it's just, it's not something that maybe most people would share, but we feel like we need to share it because, you know, the community becomes part of sort of almost an extended family to us. And we're so closely connected with those people. So
it's an awesome new dynamic in this world to have this, you know, the one-way relationships are so deep, but now even with technology, they're coming back to you. And by the nature of you're moving around a lot, you get some of those in-person connections as well. So it's cool. We've enjoyed following the journey. We do post your videos on the Catalyst from time to time as well. So people can keep up and, you know, just, as a former agency person, just seeing that you've been able to grow Symphony to the point where you can go do this is something to be very proud of. And we'll continue to root for your success, Wander Local.
Well, thank you so much, Joe. And we love the Catalyst.
Yeah.
So we appreciate you having us come hang out with you today.
From SymphonyCatalyst.com.